Hare Krishna. Welcome. Today I elected to talk about the golden words from the golden avatar, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Ishan, where did he go? He's gone. He had a very nice poster. The golden avatar is Sri Chaitanya. That's him on the altar in the center. An avatar is an incarnation of God who descends, comes down. Chaitanya was here about 500 years ago. He was known as Avarana, avatar. Covered incarnation. He wasn't an obvious incarnation. Is he mentioned in the Vedas? Yes. But he's not one of the mainstream incarnations like Dashavatara, the 10 major incarnations. He's hidden or covered. And probably because he's also a mixture. He's not only Vishnu energy, he's Vishnu Shakti, which is the feminine energy. Vishnu energy, God energy, is the masculine energy. Vishnu Shakti is the feminine energy. He's a combination of the two. He is Krishna and Radha combined. When he first appeared, apart from many miracles and very unusual happenings, which we're not going to get into today, he became an amazing scholar from a very young age. Because he is an incarnation of God, he was able to read his lessons, Sanskrit grammar, whatever else. He taught all the shastras, all the scriptures, so many things. One time, commit to memory. Pretty good, huh? Would you like to be able to do that? Maybe some of you can. Maybe some of you have photographic memory. That's one of the things I keep praying for. Don't quite have it yet. One of these lifetimes, maybe. But he could retain everything, having read it once. A little later on in his... Then, because of his knowledge, he appeared to be... He got seduced by knowledge, or so it appeared. And he became... Sometimes when you become very knowledgeable, very learned and scholarly, you get a little bit full of yourself. It's been known to happen. And that's at least part of the Leela, his pastime. He seemed to be that way when he was younger. And then, of course, he had the change of heart. And he just became a full-blown devotee of God. So in the second part of his incarnation, if you will, once he became a devotee and he started to manifest his real purpose, his real dharma here on earth, and began to have many, many people following him, as souls like that do, especially if they're incarnations of God. Along the way, he took on two brothers, Rupa and Sanatan, who were actually ministers for the Muslim king who was in power at that time in Bengal, which was West Bengal, East Bengal. East Bengal is now Bangladesh. And Muslims were in power at that time. So Rupa and Sanatan were ministers to the Muslim, actually to the governor, I think. So their only wish was to follow Chaitanya and to become devotees of God, to practice bhakti yoga, yoga of love and devotion. and that was Chaitanya's teaching. So they left their posts as government ministers. In fact, they had to sort of abscond in the middle of the night, sort of thing, and because the governor did not want them to go, because they were very, very good at managing the affairs. But they left. In this part of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there are three major scriptures or books that we use here connected to Krishna consciousness. The first one is the Bhagavad Gita, Song of God, Krishna's conversation with Arjuna. The second is the Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Purana, same thing. It's one of the 18 Puranas. And it's all about Krishna's pastimes on earth when he was here 5,000 years ago. And this one, Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is sort of a, like, Prabhupada likes to call this the graduate study or postgraduate study. So there's a section in here where Chaitanya is teaching Sanatan Goswami. And that's the section I'm going to draw from today. So the book is written by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami at a very late phase of his life. He was inspired to write this. He was a scholar and a great saint himself. But he was told to write this. He said, "Oh, I cannot write it. I can barely hold a pencil or plume or whatever he was writing with. I'm too old." But it's very voluminous what he's written here, and it's more advanced. Typically, I'm not going to get into that so much. I hope. I just want to get into a few things that he said that are really wonderful, fascinating. So they are golden words that we can use. So. One of the questions that Sanatan Goswami asked Chaitanya, he wasn't a Goswami then, he was just a beginning devotee, so to speak. If you're hanging out with God, you're not really a beginning devotee, even though it appears though that you are, I don't think. He asked him to explain the Atmarama verse. There's a very famous verse called the Atmarama verse. And would you please explain that? Because Chaitanya, even at the age of 12, defeated one of the most famous pundits or academic spiritual scholars in India at that time, Keshava Kashmiri. He defeated him in argument, polemics, quoting Shastra and backing up certain philosophical points. He defeated him when he was 12. So that's the kind of mind that he had. So Sanatan says, "Can you explain this verse to me?" He said, this is what he said. "Sahaje amara kichu artha nahi vashe tomara shabara shonge bole ye kichu prakashe." Bengali. That's my best Bengali. Sorry. And Chaitanya says, "Generally by myself, I cannot give an explanation. But by the strength of your association, something may manifest itself." Now, this is God, famous scholar at that time. He's fully grown now. He's not 12 years old at this stage. I myself cannot really give. I'm not qualified. That's what he's saying. "But by the strength of your association, because you are such an honest, sincere seeker, you are such a pure soul, maybe I will be inspired." It's a wonderful statement. I don't claim to be Chaitanya myself, but by your influence, maybe I will say something of value today. Then he proceeded, Chaitanya proceeded to give 61 versions of the Atmarama verse. 61 different translations. The average Sanskrit word has about 22 meanings. plenty of room for movement there. So he gave 61. I'm not about to get into those. So, how is it we are all sitting here today? All of us. It's just this happenstance. We just happen to be here together in this temple on this lovely day. The door is open. Anyone can come. We just ask you to take your shoes off. That's all. You cannot be sitting here in a place like this discussing this degree of spiritual knowledge unless you're spiritual. Unless you're a seeker. A genuine seeker. Oh, you may argue, oh, no, I'm just curious. Just want to see what it's about. Okay. We may have some people like that. And you may argue, oh, no, I just come for the food. I come for the vegetarian food. I think they call it prasad. They told me it was spiritual. I know it's delicious, and that's why I'm here. Okay. Good enough. But that's not why most of us are here. Most of us are here because we want the spiritual experience. We're on the path. We're seekers. That's why we're here. Well, that means anybody can walk in the door. No. They can't. Yeah, the door is open. Yeah, they can walk upstairs. No, they can't. Why? Because to sit where you're sitting at this moment in time requires what? Punya. Sukriti. Punya means it requires good fortune that's been built up over time, good karma. Punya and sukriti means due to good actions in the past, due to having been on a spiritual path or having been wonderfully charitable souls toward others. When? Just last life? I don't think so. It's not enough. Many lifetimes. How many? I don't know. Different for all of us, I'm sure. That's the only way you would be sitting here listening to this degree of spiritual knowledge. It's nothing to do with me. Punya. Good karma, good fortune. Pious deeds, pious credits. That's what it takes. We're all on different levels spiritually. We know that. We're all on different levels materially too, aren't we? That's fine. But we're all here. That's what we have in common. So, when consciousness is cleansed, one can understand what and who Krishna is. Only after consciousness has been cleansed, purified, purged. Well, how long does that take? A couple days, a couple of weeks, a month or two, a few years? No. It takes lifetimes. Lifetimes. How many lifetimes? To what degree are you ready to surrender? That will tell us how many lifetimes. Well, I'll surrender. Sort of, kind of. But I got these two or three other things here I like to do. Quietly. Off to the side. I don't want to give those up just yet. Okay. Might take a few more lifetimes. I like my little things here. Prabhupada points out in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, verse 28, Yesham Tvantagatam Papam Jananam Punyakarmanam Te Dvandvam Moha Nirmukta Bhajante Mam Drida Vrataha. And the translation is, persons who have acted piously in previous lives and this life whose sinful reactions have been removed, eradicated. What is sinful reactions? It's simply negative karma, isn't it? Whose negative karma has been purged, purified, eradicated over a period of lifetimes, and are freed from the dualities of delusion. Rich, poor, black, white, fat, thin, ugly, beautiful, win, lose, right, wrong, dualities that we find in this world. What is it? What is the essential principles beneath duality? Attraction and aversion. All right? That's material consciousness. The world of duality. Who's freed from dualities of delusion, they engage themselves in my service with determination. That's what Krishna says. They sit here at the temple. You may say, oh, but I don't engage with determination. Okay. But you're here. And you're listening. And you're interested. And you chant. And you take prasadam. And you make an offering to the deity. To God. You know. Most people would rather watch the match than sit here. Okay. Unless one is freed from reactions of sinful activities, one cannot understand Krishna or engage in his transcendental loving service, says Prabhupada. So, you souls have been freed from who knows countless sinful reactions, negative reactions from many, many lifetimes. That's why you're sitting here. Price of admission. That's the price of admission. It's free. Well, kind of. Assuming you've done all this in past lives, yeah, waltz right in, sit down. You might enjoy it. And if you hadn't done that, you'd get right back up and head out that door within about 5 minutes. It's not for me. It's okay. So, in his explanations to Sanatana Goswami, he talks about the three worlds. I'm going to pursue that for a bit. I think this golden words of the golden avatar, this is going to have to be part one, it seems. So here he speaks, he says, this is Chaitanya, the abode of the external energy is called Devi Dham. That's the material world, external energy of God, material energy. And its inhabitants are the conditioned souls. We are the conditioned souls. It is there that the material energy, Durga, resides with many opulent maidservants. So Durga is a goddess, and she's in charge of material energy, the external energy of God. In India, many, many, many people worship Durga. It's very common. So in the purport, Prabhupada says, because he wants to enjoy the material energy, the conditioned soul is allowed to reside here in Devi Dham. Dham means a place, a location. It also can mean a world. Devi Dham is simply the material creation. And it refers to Durga Devi. The external energy where Goddess Durga carries out the orders of the Supreme Lord as his maidservant. She does what he asks. The material energy is called Jagad Lakshmi. It's divine, it's feminine energy, but it's Jagat. It's connected to the universe, physical world. She protects the bewildered conditioned souls. We're protected by her here. Durga is therefore known as the Mother Goddess. right? We know this term, mother goddess. Who's her husband? Shiva. Shiva is one of the highest levels of gods, and Shiva, in terms of his, as a guna, avatar, what's his job? Destruction. To wrap up the creation. Creation comes into being, lasts for a while, and then it's dissolved. Later on, comes into being, lasts for a while, is dissolved. There's your cycle. Just like the seasons, you know? So creation works in the same manner. Now, we don't know that because our vantage point is kind of small. But Shiva's job is to wrap it up. But Shiva is also a very, very high being, and he's an important being, and he looks after many things. He's not an average soul like you and me. Okay, so Durga's husband is Shiva, and he's known as the Universal Father. Universal Mother, Universal Father. One of the names for Durga is what? Durga means fort, or it's actually, it means prison. Material world is like a prison. We are all imprisoned here because of our, we didn't want to be in the spiritual world anymore and play by the rules. And be subservient to God or God's energy or God's wishes. So I say, okay, that's fine. You don't want to do that. We have certain rules up here you don't want to follow. I mean, I have a different place for you. Your soul's eternal. We won't kill you off. Just give you a different place to live. Down here. So it's like a prison house. Because you... usually you go to a prison house for bad behavior, not good behavior, by the way. So that's where we're all located, down here, until we become liberated from this cycle of repeated birth and death. So Durga supplies all material facilities. And then, because we can pray to Durga, as is very popular... In India, it's very popular to pray to Durga. For what? For material facilities. Well, I need this, I need that, please give me this, please give me a husband, give me a wife, you know. That's typically what Durga is, people beseech her for. And she gives it. So now, hey, you know, I'm doing pretty good down here. Got a good job, making money, got a nice house, got a great wife, have a couple kids. I actually like one or two of them. And off we go. So we get a little comfortable. We get complacent down here, don't we? We get complacent. It's not so bad. And we stay here lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. All right? So, now, the three worlds are also divided in various ways. Three worlds is Devidam, the material world. Then there's, of course, the spiritual world. Here in the material world, we have what's known commonly, even in Christian orthodoxy, as well as Islam, as well as Judaism. What do we have? Heaven, earth, hell, right? It's very common. But our understanding in the Vedic system is heaven is our heavenly planets. Just like the earth is a planet, this is an earthly planet where you get a nice mix of the good and the bad. Not too good, not too bad. Is there any place where we can see hell on earth? Oh, yeah. Lots of examples of hell. Living in a prison Go over to Mount Joy. That's hell. Living in prison is hell. Living in a war zone is hell. A couple of countries I could name. Living there would be hell. Yeah. So, heavenly planets, where we go when we've done good deeds for good karma. Is it the spiritual world? No. It's not. Because you come back down after a while. When you exhaust your punya, your pious credits, your good karma, when your bank balance runs dry, they send you back down. You can go to hellish worlds as well. And when your negative bank balance is finished, you can get promoted again. This can go on for thousands of lifetimes down here. So the spiritual world is also divided into Vaikuntha, which is where Vishnu typically lives in all the manifestations of Vishnu, God. People who look at God with an attitude of awe and reverence, very pious, bowing down, sort of fearful of the power of God and very careful, very reverent, and, you know, on your best behavior. Or perhaps a step above that, want to serve God, want to become servants of God. That's the Vaikuntha planets, the heavenly planets. There you would find avatars such as Lord Ram, Ram Leela, for those of you who know it, and various other manifestations of Vishnu. So, but the one above it is Goloka Vrindavan. Goloka Vrindavan is where Krishna lives. Here, we try to learn about God and expand our God consciousness. On what level of God consciousness? Every single level, all the levels. But many people have a very limited understanding of God and the different levels and what God consciousness can be, can mean. Prabhupada has blessed us with a much deeper or comprehensive understanding that beyond is Goloka Vrindavan, where Krishna lives. There is not a formal approach of awe and reverence to God. There is more a familiar approach where one can go into relationship of dasya, friendship, servitorship, sakya, friendship, vatsalya, parental, having God as your child, and conjugal, also madhurya, lila. So this is a much higher level of God consciousness. So we can look at the three worlds as the material world, the spiritual world of the Vaikuntha level on reverence, and the spiritual world of the familiar level where you and God are hanging out. And he's more or less your equal. That is the other level. So it says, Prabhupada says, when a living entity is liberated from the material world but does not know of the opulences of Vaikuntha level, spiritual level, then he goes to Mahesh Dham. He goes to Shiva's level. And the liberated soul who does not get an opportunity to serve the personality of Godhead. Therefore, although this Mahesh Dham is Shiva's Dham and above material world, it is not fully the spiritual world. Okay? So there's an example of that. In the material world, in each universe, we have a creator, a maintainer, and a destroyer, according to Vedic understanding. These three positions are widely known. Everything has beginning, middle, and end. everything that comes into being must be maintained, and after a while it runs its course, it comes to an end, and it is wrapped up or dissolved. Universal. So the creator is who? Brahma is the creator. This is a position given to whom? To a jiva. A regular soul like you and me. It's a very important position, you know? Chief executive officer, financial controller, prime minister, one of these characters. Big position. Very important. Brahma creates all the diversity and life in the universe. Very important job. Wait a second, I thought there was a big explosion and then it all just fell into a nice shape down here. Yeah, well, blow something up at home and see if it falls into a nice shape. Absurd. Brahma's the creator. It's explained in the Vedas that the Brahma in this universe has what? How many heads? Four heads. Come on. You're putting me on. Couldn't have four heads. One. We all got one. No, he's a busy guy. He's got a lot on his mind. He's got a head for every direction, every cardinal direction, north, south, east, west. He's got a big responsibility. And we're dealing with a realm far beyond anything we know. So let us not limit it with our limited experience. So Brahma, when Krishna was on the planet 5,000 years ago, he built his wonderful city where? Dwarka. He said, the Gujaratis are such nice people. I will go to Gujarat and I will build my city on the Arabian Sea, just off the coast. Is this a tall tale of some sort? No! The ruins are there, under the water. They found them in the last, 10, 20 years. They're there. Hello. He built a fabulous city. And many, many palaces. 5,000 years ago. At that time, the gods were coming and going on the planet. Now, you can research this. You can find many traditions will tell you that there were these higher beings that were coming and going in spaceships. Yeah, of course. More like flower airplanes, but different things. Yeah, that's true. Well, we don't see them anymore. Would you come down here? You know, would this be on... Oh, places to see. Let me call the travel agent. Earth. No, I don't think so. I think I'll choose something. Oh, here's... No, a little beach. I need a little beach, a little sand. Someplace else. A little higher, maybe. Huh? You know, there's places that you go. You look at a map. You're planning your holiday with your spouse. No, I'm not going there. Come on, let's... No, I'm not going there, I told you. Go yourself. Huh? You ever had that conversation with your wife? I have. So, Brahma came to see Krishna in Dwarka. And he was greeted, and he says, yes, may I help you? He says, yes, would you tell Krishna I'd like to see him? Yes, who may I say is calling? Well, I am Brahma. I'm Brahma, the creator. Okay. He goes in. He says, Krishna, there's a gentleman here to see you. His name is Brahma. Claims he's his creator. Okay, very good. Ask him which Brahma he is. Okay. Doorman goes back out. Krishna asks, which Brahma are you? What do you mean? Which Brahma am I? I'm the Brahma with I got four heads. Yes, I can see. I'm the Brahma who is the father of the four Kumaras, which were great saints, young boys, but well-known saints, universally known. I'm the father of the four Kumaras. Okay, I'll go tell him. Goes in and says, this is a Brahma. He's got four heads. Claims to be the father of the four Kumaras. Oh, yes. Please show him in. And he comes. He bows down to Krishna. He does his obeisances. And then he begins to worship Krishna and chant mantras and praise him. And I mean, it's God, you know. He has to follow a certain decorum. And Krishna says, thank you very much. And I hope everything is going well with you. And Krishna shares some encouraging words. And he says, how may I help you today, Brahma? Well, why have you come? I'll get to that in a minute, but I'd like to know, you said, which Brahma is it? Now, again, you know, when people have these positions of power and authority, they tend to think they're kind of important. I'm a pretty powerful guy, you know. I run this, that, and the other. I create life. Well, that's impressive. Yeah, you get a little self-important, you get a little, the head blows up a bit, you know. So, always the danger of the ego. Even Brahma? Yeah. Even Brahma can suffer egocentricity. Absolutely. So, yes, Krishna, I wanted to know, why did you ask which Brahma is it? Krishna just smiled, didn't say a word. Closed his eyes, went into meditation. At that moment, all the Brahmas from all the universes began to appear in the room, one after the other. Or maybe simultaneously, not sure. This one had four heads, then eight heads, and 16, and then 32. It's kind of like gigabytes and stuff. Eh? But it went beyond that. Went hundreds of heads, thousands, millions, hundreds of millions. And Brahma's looking around, and there's so many Brahmas there, and they're all bowing down. Now, Brahma could see them all. They could not see each other. Okay? They're all bowing down to Krishna and asking him how he is and offering prayers and worship and decorum. And Krishna's saying, I just wanted to ask you if everything's going fine in your zone, in your universe, in your region. Is everything okay there? Yes, by your grace, Lord, everything is okay. Everything's going fine. We were able to defeat all of the negative influences. The demons, the criminals, the corrupt politicians, the people who are trying to take advantage of the people, the manipulators, etc. Everything's under control. Ah, very good. And we see you yourself have gone down to earth to handle things down here on earth because there's some upheaval that's taking place down there. Somebody's very exuberant about something outside the window there. So, Krishna had come himself. Now, they were in Dwarka, in his beautiful palace on earth, but they didn't know they were there. They thought they were in the spiritual world because it was so beautiful, so wonderful. They didn't know it. They're actually on the earth visiting Krishna because he conjured them all up. So after that, they went away. And Brahma said, oh, I thought I was the only Brahma. He says, yeah, you are. in this universe, which is very, very small. That's why you only got four heads. We don't need a lot of heads for this. Don't we say two heads are better than one? What about four? What about eight? They don't say too many heads spoil the broth. Never heard that one. All right. So, Brahma then learned that he's not so powerful. Yes, he's doing wonderful work. That's his service. But he learned humility. Because no matter what position you're in, there's somebody in a greater position. One of the things that we've learned in devotional service in bhakti yoga is we're taught to be humble. Sranadapi sanichena toror iva sahishnuna amanina manadena kirtanya sadahari. That one must become humble like the grass, which takes a very low place. And as tolerant as a tree. So if you can be humble like the grass, no matter what happens, and as tolerant as a tree, that pretty much is, you're either on the edge or you've completely dissolved your ego. Because ego means it's all about me. Hey, you see me? I'm here. That's ego. You can be there, but we don't have to get wrapped up in our own self-importance. So that was a lesson for Brahma in this particular story. So we have three worlds. How about the Gayatri Mantra? Om Bhurvasva Tatsavitur-varenyam Bhargo-devasya-dhimahi Diyo-yo-na-prachodayat. Right? Very famous mantra. Everybody knows the Gayatri Mantra. They know Om. And the next one they know is the Gayatri, usually. Of course, we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Why is it called the Maha Mantra? Do we just call it that? No. Maha means... great. A great mantra. Because all other mantras fit inside. You chant the Maha Mantra, all the other mantras are included. But Gayatri is a wonderful mantra. We chant Gayatri as well. And it's a mantra to the sun god. So, what are the three worlds in the Gayatri? Om Bhur Bhuva Sva. What's Bhur? Bhumi, earth. What's Sva? Swarga, heavenly planets, higher planets, no? What's Bhuva? It's not spiritual, it's astral. It's the astral world. Yeah, world of spirits, if you will, in that sense. That's what Bhuva is. So that's another definition of the three worlds, according to the Gayatri Mantra. The Gayatri Mantra is asking for blessings on all the worlds. Your ancestors might be included in the Bhuva, especially if they just passed on. Then we have for Krishna, when he was on earth, he had three dhams. What were they? Vrindavan. Where was he born? Was he born in Vrindavan? No, he's born in Mathura. The city. He was born in the city. And then he was taken away to the country to protect him from Kamsa. The evening of his birth, same night, he was taken to the small village of Vrindavan. So Vrindavan is his place. And then at age, what was it? 12, 14, 16, when he came in to Mathura at Kamsa's invitation to the tournament, wrestling tournament, right? And then from there on, he lived in Mathura for a while. So that's his second Dhamma, or first, however you like. What's the third one? We already mentioned it, Dwarka. Dwarka. So those are the three worlds, three sacred places for Krishna. What's the Vaishnavas, the followers of Vishnu, also have a thing called Chaturdham. You know Chaturdham? The four Dhammas? Which are the Chaturdhammas in India? What are they? Badrinath. No. Not for the Vaishnavas, for the Shaivites.
Vaishnava.
Yeah, yeah. So Badrinath, Dwarka, Puri, Jagannath Puri, and Rameshwaram, Ram's place. You're supposed to visit the Char Dham before you die. Have you done it? How many? Just me. You should go. Some I've been many times. You should go. It's like Badrinath in the north, and then Dwarka on the west coast, and then Puri on the east coast, and then down in South India, Rameshwaram.
South coast.
South, well, no, not quite on the south coast, but just opposite Sri Lanka. This is where Ram built the bridge to Lanka. Oh, no, no, no. That's just another story. Don't believe it. That's myth. That's mythology. Mythology. Prabhupada calls it rascology. Rascalism. Well, if you looked at the satellite photographs between India and Sri Lanka, you will see this bridge under the water at the bottom of the sea. Oh, really? Yes, you can see. It was built with stones. When? Recently? Yes. 2 million years ago. 2 million years ago. It's there. You can say, oh no, these are stories. Dwarka's there. The bridge is there. What do you mean there's stories? Not stories. Scientists think they're stories. Everything's a story. You know, to them. When Chaitanya was present on the planet, what were the three dhams? What are his three dhams? What are his three lokas? Where was he born? Mayapur, which was part of Navadvip, so Navadvip. Where did he live in his sannyas years, his years as a renunciate? Jagannath Puri. And which was the place he always went on about? He visited once. Vrindavan. Those are his three lokas. Here, Chaitanya continues to speak to Sanat Goswami. He says, Krishna is compared to sunshine. And Maya is compared to darkness. Wherever there is sunshine, there cannot be darkness. As soon as one takes to Krishna consciousness, to God consciousness, no matter how happy you are in this world, or how happy you've been, or how happy you may be on occasion, the problem is that we are afflicted with sorrow, sadness, confusion, bewilderment, depression, disease, and loss. We all know it. We all go through it. all from time to time in life. And we know others who go through it and suffer. But, you know, we make the best of it. And then the worst possible thing happens at the end. What happens? You lose everything. Absolutely everything is taken from you. Everything, everyone, whatever you own, whatever is dear, whatever is important, whatever you enjoy, those loved ones, gone with death. That's how we know that we don't belong here. Yet we come back. Time and again, time and time again, we come back. When is it enough, my friends? Time out. When's it enough? When is time served here in the prison of the material world enough? Why don't we seek a parole? To get out of jail free card. Why don't we seek that? As we become more God conscious, the repressive effect of illusion of the material energy of the darkness will begin to dissipate. That is the point. In the Bhagavatam, Krishna says, Ritertam yat pratiyeta na pratiyeta chatmani tadvidyadatmano mayam yata bhaso yata tamaha. What appears to be truth without me is certainly my illusory energy. Without God at the center, it's illusory energy. It's not the truth. Or if it is the truth and you think it's the truth, it's a temporary truth. It's going to come to an end. He continues, for nothing can exist without me. So God's words. It is like a reflection of a real light in the shadows. For in the light, there are neither shadows nor reflections. So what do you want? Okay, here's your choice. You want a shadow, you want a reflection, or you want the light, the truth. I'll take two shadows and one reflection, please. Okay. Should I pack that for takeaway, or are you going to eat it here? Right? The external energy of Krishna, known as, what's the name of the external energy? We all know it. Maya. What do those two syllables mean? Maya. There's a meaning there. What does ma mean? Not. What's ya mean? This. Not this. This ain't it. It's a different way to say it. Oops, made a mistake. This is Maya. Yeah. Material, the illusory energy of Krishna, known as Maya, is always ashamed to stand in front of Krishna. Well, that's interesting. Just as darkness is ashamed to remain before the sunshine. Does darkness stay when the sun comes up? Oh no. Runs in the other direction. Gone. I'm out of here. Alright? However, that Maya bewilders unfortunate people who have no intelligence. Thus they simply boast that this material world is theirs and they are its enjoyers. That's where we go wrong. It's all mine. Prabhupada says the entire world is bewildered because people are thinking this is my land. This is my Ireland. This is my Africa. This is my India. This is my America. Here I am. Uh-huh. In Ireland, they say it differently. It's my field. You heard that one? Have you heard them say it? Oh, yeah. That's how they say it here. And they mean it. Don't get between a man and his field, whatever you do. Huh? Not knowing the real value of life, people think that the material body and the land where it is produced, that's the all in all. Body, land, stuff. That's the all in all. What's that other verse? Bauma ijadi. That the land of birth becomes ijadi, worshipable. I worship my land of birth. Which lifetime? This one. I'm Indian. I worship India. Oh. And last life? When you were Burmese? And time before that, when you were Thai? Did you worship them? Oh, yeah. Well, I did. Yeah? Now, how'd that work for you? Here you are. Different life, different body. No. You don't worship the body. You don't worship the land of birth. You can be respectful. You can be grateful. But don't get confused. Why did war start? Tell me. Isn't that people busy worshiping the land of birth? Isn't that part of it? Or, oh, no. Maybe I got it wrong. Maybe it's religion. It's one or the other. Right? This is the basic principle behind, Prabhupada is speaking, nationalism, socialism, and communism. Worshipping body, nationality, identity, land, country, location. But you're not that. You're a soul. You've forgotten. You're spiritual. You're eternal. When you become an adult, don't you put away the things of the child? Don't you leave the child toys behind? Same. When you become conscious, you leave your unconscious beliefs and perceptions behind. Right? And that's where Prabhupada says, such thinking, which simply bewilders a living being, is nothing but rascalism. It is due to the darkness of Maya, but as soon as one becomes God conscious, Krishna conscious, he is immediately relieved from such misconceptions. So that's why we're here. To help you to become God conscious. Remember what I said in the beginning. No one's here by accident. You have to have the punya. You have to have the sukriti. You souls, my friends, are very, very advanced. I don't care what you think. You are very evolved souls and have been around for numerous, numerous lifetimes. Or you wouldn't be sitting here. Believe me. You would not be sitting here. You know how close you are to liberation, getting off the wheel of repeated birth and death, more importantly, developing love for God and going into that relationship, which is why we're here. You know how close you are to these things? You're almost there. You're so close. Or you wouldn't be here. We urge you. We encourage you. We plead with you. Please continue on the path of God consciousness, Krishna consciousness. Please continue to develop yourself and get closer to God. Every single day of your life, you should be able to point to one thing you did, said, or understood that took you one step closer to your truth. One step closer to God. One thing, small. You're on your way. And you can say, oh yeah, but this and this and that. Never mind that. Never mind. Maybe that taught you something. One thing each day. That's all. And that's why we're here. We're here to share this Sangha, this association, to help you, to get inspired by you. We're going to have kirtan, and then we're going to have prasadam. So, I thank you for your kind attention. And I hope that was of some little value for you. And do we have any questions? Thank you.
And you just mentioned how without Konya, none of us would be here, and how it's not accidental that the door is open, but only certain amount of people, only certain jivas are coming, you know, because they're drawn to spiritual life. And I was wondering, I often think to myself, why is it that, you know, if we have the Konya to be born, you know, the pious credits, and that we're open to spiritual life, how is it that many of us are born into families where our families are completely adverse to spiritual life? How do we get the punya to be put in the same family then?
You noticed that, huh? Look at Prahlad. Prahlad Maharaj was born in the family of the most powerful demon in the entire universe, Hiranyakashipu. Whose father, Hiranyakashipu, then tried numerous ways to kill him, because he wouldn't toe the line. He wouldn't do what he was instructed to do. He wouldn't become a rank materialist like his father wanted him to do. So he had him put to death. But Vishnu kept saving him, so he wasn't able to put him to death. Huh? So he was born into demoniac family. Yes. Many of us are born into such families. Why is that? Well, it says in the Vedas, if you become a liberated soul, then seven generations of your family before and hence into the future, all of their negative karma will be removed, dissolved. This is the greatest thing you could possibly do for your family. So there's that. The other thing is, maybe you need that kind of test and challenge on your own spiritual path. God knows I had it with the family in which I was raised. My mother couldn't even say Krishna. All she could say was Krishna. She had such a dislike for Krishna that she couldn't even say the name. But, you know, I still went and did what I had to do because I had to do it. So, this is not uncommon. It happens a lot. And we all have our tests and challenges that we have to overcome. And that's what strengthens us, doesn't it? You know, if you're born in a family where everybody is on the same wavelength, I know in India that's often the case. Everybody has the same degree or a similar degree of piety and interest in spirituality. Well, that's a very blessed birth, I assure you, because in the West, many of us have come to Krishna consciousness and it's been exactly the opposite in terms of being raised with our families, as we are approaching a foreign philosophy. Anybody else? Okay.
When Nanda Maharaj and his local people were performing a yajna for Indra to send rain, why did Krishna stop him from doing that?
Because Krishna was there to establish that when one worships God, one waters the root of the tree. And he was there to discourage the worship of demigods. Demigods are worshipped for material blessings, material benefits, etc. And demigod worship has been very strong in many, many cultures historically, as you know. And so Krishna was establishing the fact that by worshipping God, all of this is included. You water the root of the tree, all the branches, all the leaves are satisfied. So why go to these lesser beings and ask for material favor? Just go to God. So yes, the yajna sacrifice that we do here is the chanting of the holy names. That's the sacrifice. That's what purifies us and makes us more ready for our spiritual life, our spiritual advancement, spiritual growth. Okay, good. Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.